Welcome once again to another fantastic episode of the Business Creators Radio Show. We help business creators like you win at the game of business and marketing so you can thrive from your intersection of your brilliance and your passion and make a difference for your community, market, and audience. Please take a moment and visit our website, www.businesscreatorsradioshow.com. You'll find hundreds of episodes covering a breadth and depth of topics relevant to you as a business creator, and links to subscribe via your favorite network so you get fresh episodes delivered straight to you. And now, here's today's episode. Let's get started.
My name is Adam Homey. I am your host. I am honored by your wise decision to tune in and invest in yourself today at the Business Creators Radio Show. Again, please be sure to subscribe via your favorite network so you get fresh episodes delivered straight to you. Today's conversation is something you're definitely going to want to go back and listen to at least a couple more times. I urge you right now, before we get started, to make sure you have in front of you a pad of paper and two pens. The reason I say two pens, by the way, is because just when you're capturing that aha moment, that thing that's going to give you that edge that's going to move you forward, your pen could run out of ink. You could have something happen that causes the pen to just otherwise not work. You get that thing where you're trying to write on the paper and it just doesn't show ink. Or if you're like me and you have feline supervisors, one of them could grab the pen and make off with it just when you need it. So pad of paper, two pens, take that home with you. You can use it in your own trainings. Today, we're going to discover how to build brand equity. I'm all about the branding. In my podcast, Reach System, we work with people to host and launch their podcasts as their networking, client attraction, and celebrity branding tool. So brand is very important to me. And I also know that brand is so much more than simply picking your fonts and your colors for your logo. It gets into marketing. It gets into conversation. It gets into how you relate to the market and how you relate to the people within it. Does it make you make a difference for your community, market, and audience? See, I'm so excited here. And today, we have somebody who I almost couldn't believe that we were able to get this guy on the show. He's so awesome. Just haven't checked him out already. His name is Kyle Duford. He specializes in crafting outstanding experiences for global brands. As a former magazine editor, he spent much of his 20-plus year career in the outdoor and active lifestyle, fashion, and sports industries through the e-commerce and digital lens for brands such as Nike, Doc Martens, Keen, Lululemon, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, Powerbar, Ariat, Chrome Industries, Noon, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, and others. See, I don't know every brand out there. Kyle's unique blend of design, branding, and digital best practices lends itself to creating and leading some of the world's leading brands. A bold, no BS charismatic speaker, the type I like on this show, with a penchant for hitting brand sweet spots, he brings his experience to any size audience on topics ranging from business growth to branding, digital marketing trends, positioning, and more. Most recently, he has been speaking about the future state of retail in a post-pandemic world and the complexities of global brand expansion in this environment. You can check out his website at www.thebrandleader.com. And at this point, Kyle Duford, come on in. The weather's fine.
Hey, Adam. Thanks for having me.
Awesome. Awesome. Before we get into some of the great things you're going to share with us today, what we like to do here at Business Creators Radio is take a step back. I read your official bio. It's so impressive. I'm not sure I'm worthy to be here with you, and it's my show. So what we like to do is just get a little bit more about your personal story and your own tale and how that drove you and brought you to where you are today, serving business creators from your intersection of your brilliance and your passion.
Yeah, wow. First of all, I have already violated your rule. I only have one pen with me, and I was that guy in high school to borrow paper and pens. But I like that. I might steal that in the future. My story is bizarre and unworthy. You're very kind with your words. You absolutely deserve to be here with me. I'm the one who should be looking up to you. I started off not knowing what I wanted to do in my life, and somehow I ended up in magazines. I didn't end up there. I tried to be a magazine writer, and everyone would say, "Hey, kid, have you ever written before?" I'm like, "No, but I, you know, I like the topic, and I can write, I think." And they said, "Yeah, get lost." And so I started my own magazine instead, which was foolish. It was in the triathlon world, so started a triathlon publication and started writing and doing some good stuff. It got bought by a competitor. And then afterwards, I went back to those same magazines and said, "Hey, can I write for you now?" And they went, "Oh my gosh, you're the guy who is the editor of that magazine? Absolutely." And it was the first time I looked at life and said, okay, nothing changed for me. I didn't go have more schooling or anything. I'm the same guy. But it was just this, having this label on me all of a sudden opened doors. And that just showed me a lot. From then, gosh, I went into, I saw the writing on the wall for magazines. So I went into online content. From there, I went into e-commerce because I started to be able to tell a story with great design and learning analytics and online stuff. And all of a sudden, I became this kind of weird amalgam of different types of marketing and traffic drivers and understanding the sales process. And really what it ended up being was I learned how to tell a good brand story. And so that's where I am today.
Wow, that's awesome. And I've discovered this myself in working with clients. It's one thing to go to conferences and go to networking events and you have your business card. However, if you have a publication, if you have something that invites people to consume the content and follow it, you can have a way different conversation with your audience. One of my clients is a podcast host, and she had the most interesting thing happen to her a couple years ago when she went to her industry's major annual event. It was happened to be right here in Las Vegas, so I got to meet up with her. She had a very interesting discovery that she was there to promote her business, obviously, and get consulting clients for a consulting firm, things along those lines. However, she also has an online publication that shares insights within her industry, and it has weekly articles, it has a podcast attached to it, and some other such assets. And again and again and again, people would run up to her because they follow her weekly e-newsletter and they listen to her podcast and just wanted to tell her how much they enjoyed getting her e-newsletter and getting her podcast and sharing their thoughts on it. Those conversations went a lot further than, so what do you do there, Carl or Kyle?
Right.
Yeah. So that's one of the, so that goes into personal celebrity branding, which is something that we should all be doing. However, beyond that, you have some things you want to share with us, both in the retail space and also looking more globally. You gave us about five or six different areas you'd like us to cover. So we'll go through those probably in order, but we'll see where the conversation goes. First of all, I know you have some insights on this whole thing with the post-pandemic world, and God, if it doesn't get here soon, I'm telling you. So let's start with your vision of what's going on with retail and e-commerce, which in the superficial view of many has taken a major hit, and how we're going to move into this post-pandemic world, which really needs to be here like the day before yesterday.
Right. I mean, wouldn't that be nice?
Yeah.
I can't even imagine in the town you're in, the damage it has done to the economy. It's interesting because it's not like we changed fundamentally. You know, we still needed to shop. We still needed to get, you know, the basic care items we needed, food, diapers, whatever. But it's how we went about getting them. And obviously, we know the horror stories of going and unfortunately not finding toilet paper and paper towels and things like that, which, you know, subsided after a little bit. But what was really remarkable was people who never shopped online before, or which sounds crazy, right? But my parents, for example, or people who just were reluctant to give their credit card information online, or just like that human touch in a store, all of a sudden had to go online. And people who were using things like, you know, ordering Walmart at home or you know, Target pickup in the parking lot now became the norm. And so everything moved from, you know, this old model, which had been dying anyway. We know traffic has been declining in malls and retail stores for some time, partially because of partially because of e-commerce and the proliferation of the internet and opportunities there, but also because of big box retailers and so forth. You know, that's kind of a long story that's been told for a while. But now all of a sudden people were going, hey, I can order my dog food online. Okay, I'll do that. And obviously we know Amazon and, you know, this isn't new stuff, but in the sheer masses and numbers that people were doing this, it just changed everything. And so it's one of those deals where, like, when DVDs came out, people said, oh, that's the end of movie theaters. Well, we know that's not what happened. It's just, we changed our behavior a little bit. We might stay home on certain occasions and now go to the movie theater if they're open on other occasions. So the DVD didn't wipe out movies. It just changed how we appropriated ourselves to them. And it's the same kind of thing with retail. I mean, I obviously love shopping just like anyone else, online, in-store, yeah, whatever. Yeah. I like to try things on. My wife loves to try things on. She's a big shopper. But we also like to window shop and all, you know, and do that kind of like virtual, not virtual, the idea of just kind of trying things on and seeing if you like it and then shopping online instead. Showrooming, that's the word I was looking for. So now you're without that opportunity, you have to do everything online. So now, gosh, returns have changed and the way you can change your plane ticket and all these things that weren't a thing before now are a thing. And now the expectation of that to stay around for a long time is very prevalent. So I just think in general, we're going to have a different retail experience. It's kind of here to stay. It's mobile shopping. It's e-commerce shopping, but on steroids. And a lot of the brands that you mentioned that I worked with and for or consulted for that you mentioned at the top of the show, I mean, they're hitting, you know, double their growth in a very, very short period of time. And that has changed. Where do you even put your inventory? Do you, you know, does the Gap ship their inventory to the stores anymore? Because now they've already gone through a couple seasons during the pandemic where, you know, they may have taken all their inventory for spring, summer around maybe February 15th or so. And then everyone shut down. Well, they were in the stores. So what do you do with that when things open back up, you know, months later? Do you clear it out? Do you ship it back to the distribution center? Do you try to, you know, hold on to it for a while? What if it's off trend next time or whatever? So many things changed. And I think you're going to see a lot of everything from supply chain down to delivery and returns really be, changing and then really stay around for quite some time, kind of in this new normal.
You know, you bring up an interesting point, but first of all, I'd like to make a comment. Remember a year ago when if you tried to walk into a business with a mask, they'd call the police?
Yep.
And now if you don't, but anyway, in all seriousness, yep. About a month into that bug thing happening, my printer, which had been with me since the year 2010, in other words, 10 years, decided just basically go defunct on me. It was it was showing an error. And when I looked up the error online, the best way I can describe how, you know, what you're supposed to do about that particular error, I can phrase it as, well, you can try it, but you're screwed. You're getting a new printer. Right. So I needed a new printer that day. Normally, I'd go to some place like Office Depot or Best Buy, see what they had on the shelf, and pick one out. But that wasn't available to me. So, and the other problem that some of these online retailers have, whether it's the big boxes and even some of the smaller boxes, is the online inventory doesn't always match what's actually on the shelf. And the other thing is, I needed a printer that day. I didn't need it 3 days from then. I needed it that day. Mm-hmm. So I called my local Best Buy. I told them what I needed in the printer. They recommended a model to me. I went through my checklist of what I needed an all-in-one machine to do. It did all of those things. And so I said, I'll take a printer and I'll also take an extra helping of ink, because you always like to be at least one set of cartridges ahead. Yeah. And they said, all right, well, we'll wheel to the front door. Come on down. We'll put it in your trunk. So I get there. And I can see, looking through the doors, that there is a cart, my printer, and my ink are sitting on it, and there's a sign taped to it with my name written on it.
Right.
Yet, for 20 minutes, I had to argue with them because they kept trying to tell me that I needed to get in some queue. So finally, after the third time that we went through this, and I'm sitting there 20 minutes, I walked back up to the edge of their curb again, and they tried once again with this whole, I got to get in queue. And I said, I spoke with Denise, who I believe that's actually her right inside the door there. If you turn around, you'll see that my printer and my ink are sitting on a cart, and there is a handwritten sign with my name written on it. I'm in your queue. Get me my printer.
Right, right.
The reason I bring this up, and they did, because I think they recognized that I was not going to go another 20 minutes without making their day very interesting, and I hated to have to do it. But I think part of what these brands ran into is even brands that have a high commitment to customer service found themselves in a very new world, thrust into systems that even they didn't fully understand. Like, for example, a queuing system. Why would somebody who called the store, had the thing wheeled to the front door and was told to just come pick it up, then be told they had to go to a website and enter a code,
right,
to have it wheeled to their car when it was already on the cart they were going to use to wheel it to the car? Mm-hmm. So there, I think we had a lot of frustrations. And I think that can apply to businesses of all sizes. And when we speak of branding, we think of partially the experience they have. I just chalked it up to them really being in unfamiliar territory, but in normal times I wouldn't put up with that shit.
Well, you're right. I mean, it's unfamiliar, but it's also very basic, you know? So yeah. we gave businesses problems years ago because they weren't digital, and now they were forced to go, you know, analog, and everyone got upset again. And it was a weird thing for those couple months when, you know, no one knew how long this was going to be. I mean, gosh, we didn't think it was going to be 15, 18 months, you know, later, but everyone thought, oh, go home for 2 weeks, shut your doors, it'll be over. I think very early on, you know, that was the chatter. And yeah. So businesses were like, oh, we'll close our doors for a bit, we'll be fine. And then all of a sudden, you know, everything just kind of lingered, and, you know, malls. Uh-huh. And we know obviously restaurants and bars and the sadness around, you know, those businesses folding and lots of them not recovering.
Yep.
But those big box places, Best Buy and even some of the mall anchor stores we talked about, they were forced to go backwards. And a lot of them haven't even figured out the entire omnichannel, you know, opportunity of, you know, buy online, pick up in store, it's kind of table stakes, but it takes a very, very sophisticated infrastructure and kind of system internally to make that work. Especially if you want to return to a store, if you bought it online, not just pick it up. And, you know, you're talking about inventory mismatch and you know, decrementing inventory and where it comes from, where it goes back to. So now you're saying, hey, forget all that. Just get me my printer. Like your situation, I know it's on the shelf. And not only that, you walk up there, you can see it in the glass. It's sitting there. Yeah. And I thought it was telling when you said your name was handwritten on that. So we kind of went backwards, and it was really hard for us, all of us as consumers, to kind of forgive them for those mistakes. And I don't know if you've noticed, but it's really interesting to me. Again, we shop, a lot. We've got six children, so we're always, you know, 25 years apart from each other. So we're always back and forth and trying to figure things out, you know, going to, you know, Best Buy, Bed Bath and Beyond, you name it, we're out there. And I'm starting to notice now, like, these curbside pickups are now they're getting real signs. They're getting, you know, painted strips in the parking lot, and they're getting a dedicated employee to be the one who runs and grabs stuff. I mean, but 6-7 months ago, that wasn't the case. It was doing what you're doing. Some of them have mobile apps. You can check your code. Some of them, you get an email with a barcode. You have to scan the barcode, tell them your number. People just didn't know how to go about this. There is no standardization for this pandemic pickup situation. So I just find it fascinating. And I don't think there's any one way to do it now. I think people are going to get used to certain things. I think Target has a really, really nice system picking up, and you can just look at, you know, your code and so forth. Best Buy is coming around. So there's a lot of interestingness around it, but you're right. It took a long time for us to figure out, you know, is it a good experience for me or not to go into these retail stores? We're not really into them, but going to pick up your products, and what does that do? Now, you had a difficult experience with Best Buy. It sounds like that's going to erode your confidence in that business, which, you know, talking about brand equity, that's exactly what, you know, you want to leverage. And in that case, they're losing some with you. If that happens at scale, then you're in trouble.
I gave them a pass, as I said, but you can imagine that if that happened over and over again, how many people might have just driven off having called ahead to have it wheeled to the front door and then being told that they had to get in some queue. Well, you think, okay, the person who took the call could put them in the queue. Mm-hmm. In fact, what I also said to them when I went up the third time is I said, not only am I in your queue, I'm number one at your queue. So bring me my printer now. That's actually what I said now that I think about it.
That's going to linger with you for a while, I think.
Yeah. Well, and I, you know, we see these things repeated, and also you have businesses that really aren't always sure of what they're supposed to do. The mandates can be confusing. Mm-hmm. You have folks that want to argue over certain things. I also had, and I'm not going to belabor this interview with that, but I had a really, really bad experience with a security guard at a hotel where I was attending a seminar who physically got in my face because I had my mask off while I had a straw in my mouth and was sucking on it.
Yeah.
You know, because there was a drink in a cup for a beverage I just purchased and I was consuming it. There's even in some of the ridiculous states, there's nothing that says that you're somehow supposed to drink through your face covering. That doesn't exist.
Right, right.
Even the ones that have the idea that you should move it back and forth 100 times between bites or between sips, they don't say that you have to somehow go through it because, you know, basic common sense.
Yeah, I mean, like,
then you run into people, and I think the person I was dealing with in that situation was just some power mad person who wanted to push people around.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. And we run into that, and then the case that we had there is now you have that hotel that has publicity getting out that their guests are getting bullied over nonsense by people who have some little security guard badge and think that gives them power over life and death. I mean, this guy was using cop terminology with me, like zero tolerance zones and must detain and things like that. What, detain me? Get the hell out of here. But unfortunately, people run into this stuff. And unfortunately, businesses don't always know it's happening until you bring it to their attention. And some folks won't bring it to their attention. They'll just storm out. Me, I was there for the entire day for the conference. I made a point of meeting with three separate security supervisors just to make absolutely sure they were aware of my concerns. Other folks might have just walked out and never patronized the place again. So now you have the businesses, and this is, you know, whether it's retail, entertainment, whatever it is, that are now taking hits on their brand and they don't even know about it. So going back to even pre-pandemic, sometimes the only reviews you get are the bad ones.
Yeah, unfortunately. And I think people realize that, but, you know, especially when you're looking at a service, for sure. I think, you know, product-based businesses, I mean, there's definitely reviews on, you know, Amazon and other major retailers that, you know, serve our needs really well. But you're absolutely right. People lift up the bad reviews. And I think we've been given a little grace for businesses during the pandemic, especially during the height of the shutdowns, no matter where you are.
Yeah.
Because I think people understood that. But, you know, at some point, the frustration is there and you just, you know, like you want to give up and just go to the next thing. So I think it's just a matter of how much you really value the brand. And, you know, we go to the YMCA and
yeah.
My wife and I work out every morning religiously. And when they closed, we were like, oh, shoot, what do we do? When they opened completely differently. They changed their hours. They still haven't brought back Sunday hours. Everything's different on Saturdays. And you're like, okay, wait, how is that pandemic related now? So a lot of businesses did different things like that, whether they were trying to cut costs, whatever, but they're not owning up to it. They're not saying, listen, we don't have the money for this or whatever. They're just saying this is because of COVID. And at some point it falls short because it's just very, very thin. You can just tell that, okay, you're not offering, you know, a lollipop at the bank anymore. Now that's just saving money. It has nothing to do with, you know, if you hand it one at a time to a kid who walks in, you're not really doing COVID. You're doing this because you're using this to cut corners. Now that's not true of everyone or everything. And maybe that example isn't particularly, you know, relevant, but I think in general, we started giving a lot of grace to businesses, but they didn't necessarily do it back. And the ones who you're having a bad experience with, some of the ones that you illuminated, you know, tend to be the ones who are going to fall short. It's the ones that really cared for people and cared for the business and were really transparent. Hey, listen, if we don't do carry out, you know, take home dinners that we've never done before, but we're going to do it now. If we don't do this and sell 60 a day, we're going to go out of business. That transparency and authenticity not only resonated with people who may have been patrons in the past, but may not have been at all. But it resonated with people because it brought everything back to a human level. And when, you know, you've mentioned a few examples, it seems like there's a little disconnect between the human behind the decisions and the business and ultimately the brand and its equity to you. And along that chain, if it falls short, they're going to lose a customer.
Yeah.
So I've seen a lot of different, you know, businesses just really own nationally and locally own their honest situation. And in the end, that's going to really benefit those particular businesses.
Yeah. And for every story like the ones I've told you, I can also tell you the story of my favorite restaurant here in Las Vegas. I'm not going to say their name because of the story I'm about to tell. Part of, and again, I'm not even sure if this is in effect anymore here in Las Vegas as of our conversation here, but for a while, and maybe it's still the case, I don't know, all restaurants were supposed to take reservations. Mm-hmm. Now, this place was kind of my hangout. I go there so often that they actually know what my order is going to be the moment I walk in. So in that case, I could go up to them and I could go up to the desk and the way I could phrase my question is, you got enough numbers to fit me in? And they always do. So what they do in that case is they just add me to the reservation list and cross my name off. Because right. there's always at least one opening that hasn't been filled by a call-in or something like that. And in a couple cases where the person working the host desk didn't know me, one of the servers would come up and say, he's good. Put him down. Let him in. Hmm. Now, do you think I'm going to keep going there?
Well, I mean, again, it's your personal
experience.
Yeah,
very much
yeah,
so. Do you think if you ever come to hang out in Las Vegas and we get together, where do you think we're going to have dinner?
Well, of course. I mean, because again, you haven't said one thing about the food. You said they know your order. You didn't say anything about the food or the decor or anything. You talked about how they treated you.
Yes.
And that's a big part of it's what we call brands, emotional connections with consumers. It's not a thing. It's this, you know, esoteric kind of deal where you just understand it because it's how you feel. And it's a lot of the stuff that you mentioned. Now you add to that, you know, they were dressed well, they were very pleasant, the food was amazing, the place was spotless, you know, and then you just start building your equity there. All those things add to it.
All right, so we're actually about halfway through here. It's so much fun to tell war stories, let me tell you. So let's get into two of the points you want to make here, and I think this will probably take up the entire rest of the time, but it's going to be really good stuff. First of all, tell us more about how what you call disruptive brands here in the 21st century, now that we're in the third decade of it, are building these emotional connections that actually last. I think it's a good segue to get into that.
Yeah, well, a disruptive brand is really just, you know, one that, you know, just kind of comes in and shakes things up a little bit. You know, one of my favorite ones, you know, this in this age of digitally native vertical brands, a great example is Bonobos, men's pants company. Warby Parker is another one. Casper Mattresses. These are kind of like the ones that people look to quite a bit as, you know, the archetypes of these kind of brands. All these businesses came. They didn't invent pants at Bonobos. They didn't invent, you know, glasses and eyewear at Warby Parker. They just did it differently. And they did it differently in a way that in the case of Bonobos, it was, you know, guaranteed fit for men who didn't want to go in stores and try things on in multiple different waists and cuts and lengths. You know, Warby Parker glasses for like basically $100 that were really great. And they did the at-home try-on. You talk about Casper Mattresses and they deliver a mattress to your house. I mean, that's unheard of. So those things were so weird comparatively to, if you can remember back then, the industries that they came out of, that people started going, wait, what's going on over there? And so this kind of like a disruptor brand today is kind of one that takes risks and chances, but it's an educated risk. It's one that's based on an understanding of the customer before they actually go into it. And they're the most fascinating brands to me, because those brands are not, I mean, they become challenger brands as well. You know, ones that are, you know, rising brand that's ends up becoming dominant or in a fight with the that sector's leader, they end up becoming that, but they start as disruptors because they just make so much noise in the process. And they they're ones that we kind of aspire to work with. They're the ones that are the most exciting because they take those chances.
Yeah. I think there's a lot to that. And, you know, I mean, me, when it comes to things like buying computers, for example, I can't buy it unless I see it. Cause I, among other things, I got to see for myself that the keyboard illuminates. That's very important to me. And I have to put my hands on the keyboard so I know how it's going to feel typing. Cause mm-hmm. I spend a lot of time online and a lot of time typing. So I made this, not a mistake once, but I bought a Chromebook and I did test it in the store, but I should have tested it more. It's hard for me to use because the keyboard's too small for me. So I mostly use that one to stream videos and read books off Kindle. So it has a purpose. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I did miss that one little step there where I should have played with a little more in the store. So the idea of buying a computer online sight unseen is just probably kind of like not going to happen with me.
Okay.
Yeah. So for some folks, they do need to see it before they buy it. And then there are also people who have interesting body types where just because it says it's a size 8 dress doesn't mean it's going to fit her size 8 body.
Man, that's true. That's very true.
Yeah. Size 8 actually means different things depending on the brand and depending on the cut.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And that's why I think if you think about what we talked about earlier, there's always going to be some need for retail stores. And it's exactly why those three brands I mentioned, and another one I forgot to mention, Peloton is a really current one.
Yeah. But
all of those brands all have a physical presence after they started with their digital presence first. So Bonobos went into their guide shops, they called them, which were their unique opportunities, but they came at it with data. They know where their customers are because they started digitally native. And so they had all that information. They knew exactly where to put a store. And they followed the Amazon example of when Amazon had trialed some of their own bookstores. They knew exactly what people bought. So they only stocked what they knew was going to sell in the area in which they knew people were there to buy it. Now, Casper did the same thing. Warby Parker with their try-on program. After that, they just looked at, you know, the density of population versus the people who came and either shopped or purchased from them, and they plopped stores right there. So it's one of those deals where it goes both ways. After building a brand and its reputation based on other principles, quality, customer service, time to delivery, fit, you mentioned, then you can go back and open up a retail store. It's the complete opposite of what brands used to do.
Yeah.
Which was build a store and then go online. And so it's really interesting to me that it happens that way. And folks like you, or for people who, well, not just the people, but the products in which we seek that need to be trialed, that need to be tested, or need to be seen, you now have an opportunity to still go see them. And they might only carry one in stock. They might only carry a handful because they know you're going to customize it anyway and order it online.
Right.
Or now they'll order it from the store for you. And now you get free shipping. So there's so many different permutations of how this new method of shopping and showrooming works. And for people like you who want to buy a computer and touch it and feel it first, or people like my wife who want to try and, you know, address it Free People or Anthropology first, now you have the best of both worlds. You can return to that store, you can try on that store, but not walk out with a product. You can have people deliver it to your house for free. If you're traveling and you see something else at a different location, there's so many different ways to do this. And it's going to continue to permeate that way. And brands are going to start oozing these different ways of getting you not only the product, but the service. And kind of more importantly, their brand equity will start to be those things themselves that they offer you that other brands aren't able to or haven't thought of.
Speaking of things I never thought of, it actually never crossed my conscious mind that there's a model out there where you have retail establishments that begin with an online presence and then add physical presence. I didn't even think that such a thing was possible until you just explained it to me. I always thought that rationally, you have a business that starts, they have a physical presence. Often it's a local business because it starts in one place and then it branches out or franchises out. And the online presence kicks in as and after it gains a reputation.
Yeah.
It didn't, it never occurred to me they would sell it online first and then plant stakes.
Yeah. And it's completely different than it used to be. And I think people, a lot of people credit Andy Dunn, the founder of Bonobos. He eventually sold to Walmart, but kind of as the inventor of this. But look, there's so many these days. You know, I mentioned Peloton. Peloton started, you know, digitally first, and then they started opening stores. Tesla, to some extent, doesn't really have Tesla dealerships anywhere.
Right.
It's online, but you have a couple of different mall examples or some places. Glossier, women's makeup, classic example of the last few years. Away, the luggage company, away.com, they started online only. So it's kind of an easy way to go to market now. You know, again, if you have a viable brand that can do so, and you're investing in different ways. I mean, there's still barrier to entry. There's still a cost associated, but instead of the square footage in Manhattan, now you're talking about cost per acquisition, you know, costs and your website build and inventory and that makeup, but it's the same type of thing. It's just, you know, quite literally reversed.
Yeah. You just had me binging the Yahoo out of the Googles because I was curious as to whether there actually are Tesla dealerships. It turns out that Las Vegas has one. Now, I don't want to be distracted from your brilliance and your passion, which you're sharing with us by reading this right now, but just glancing off the graph data on the search engine page with the results, I'm seeing that I'm getting a sense that it's not your traditional type of dealership, where they may have like one of each kind of Tesla there, but it's actually more of a service center and more of a customer center than like a traditional dealership.
Yeah, I would challenge the dealership moniker on that one. I think it's probably more of a showroom. It's more of an experience. I'm not super educated on how they service their automobiles and where you go to do that. I'm sure there have to be places like that for them. However, those experiences typically in malls or, you know, new kind of fashion luxury areas of town. We all have them in different towns, you know, where all the luxury brands are. You'll see these kind of experiences where you can't even drive the car. I mean, you can't leave the inside of the mall with a Tesla. You just look at it. You can't even turn it on. So they're interesting, but there's so many different examples of this. You're delivering a brand promise through other things, not necessarily a physical touch and feel opportunity.
Yeah. Here's the funny thing. I'm looking at the Las Vegas dealership, so to speak, that's here in Las Vegas. And I'm looking at it on the map right now. It's a few blocks from that restaurant I told you about. I drive by this thing all the time. I didn't know it was there.
Well, now you know what you're doing Friday night.
Exactly.
Dinner in Tesla.
Exactly. Dinner and Tesla. So instead of Netflix and chill, it's dinner and Tesla. Got it. Yeah. I mean, next time I drive by there, I'm going to see if I see a Tesla sign. That particular stretch of that avenue is where they have a whole bunch of dealerships lined up. I never saw a Tesla sign. So that tells you it's something different. Now it looks like they service the Teslas and you can schedule a test drive and things like that. So again, to your point, it's kind of the experience. And myself, I know people who have Teslas and every single one of them has a story about how long they waited after they ordered it. There's not a single story of, I went to the Tesla dealership, threw down my money and walked out with one. That doesn't exist.
No, it doesn't exist, but they're building that aspirational kind of like anticipation. You know, it's like, it's almost like you become part of a club if you sign up for one and then, you know, you build it online or whatever, and then you finally get delivery of it. That's that little bit in there is really powerful for them because how they treat you, how they send things to you. It's being built or it's on its way. I mean, there's all these touch points that continue to get you jazzed. So when that car shows up, you're even more excited than had you bought it at a dealership and drove away with it. It's interesting if you think about the psychology behind that. It's quite different than another experience.
Yeah. I'm reading Tesla's description of how this works. You can test drive it. However, you must make an appointment with the dealer or go to Tesla.com and schedule the test drive. You cannot just walk into it. That might be why they don't have a huge sign out in front, because they know who their audience are. And these are people to come seek them out. They don't have to go looking for them. It's like, why do you never see a commercial for a Ferrari on TV? Because they don't need to run commercials. Their right. customers know what Ferrari is, and they go find the Ferrari, not the other way around.
Exactly.
Yeah. And what I'm hearing from you is we're starting to see more and more of this, even in the retail space. They have a relationship or an emotional connection to the brand, so they seek the brand out rather than it simply being a matter of the brand puts up a bunch of signs and buys a bunch of ads and hopes people notice.
Well, you're right. And to stay on the Tesla analogy, my 12-year-old daughter, for whatever reason, is in love with Teslas. And so she, every time she sees one, she goes, there's a Tesla. She can pick out the models, the 3, the 5 from a distance. I can't. And even just yesterday, we were just in Boulder, Colorado, visiting our eldest one. And while we were there, there's a lot of them in that town. And where I live in Greenville, South Carolina, they're a little bit more hard to come by. But my point is that when she sees them, she's starting to recognize, she starts seeing more and more and more of them. And it's one of those deals where you see it and you kind of, with her Ferrari example or your Lamborghini or whatever it might be, you start going, wow, that is attainable, or maybe I can get it, or there's another one I saw, maybe there's more, maybe it's more accessible. It's still this aspirational brand. And gosh, it's on so many levels. Tesla, we could dissect Tesla in its own podcast and really what their brand essence is. I would argue it's not even cars at all. It's kind of like the future, right? And that's what Elon Musk would say. But there's so many different things. You just start going, did they fall into this? Is this accidental? Is it accidental aspiration? Or is it something that really they were thinking through? I think they beget each other as things, there's high demand and then people order them. There's a wait list. They finally get them. People see them. The neighbors want them. They covet them. And it's just this cycle that goes on and on. So I'd love to see how that plays out in the next couple of years as they continue to make more and more vehicles on the road. But it's, again, it's really fascinating. And as a disruptor, I mean, there's a lot of people who didn't want him to come out with this car.
Oh, a long time. I remember. And I remember hearing stories like in New Jersey, you had Governor Chris Christie made a big, big, big fuss over Tesla coming to his state.
Yeah,
they were not happy to see Tesla around because they saw the disruption coming. You're used to, you know, Ford, Chevy, Toyota, Honda, Mazda, sometimes different combinations depending on who has what franchise license in what city or what have you. And they're used to the idea, oh, no. People come to us. They walk to our lot. We put them in a car. We drive them around. Then we put the squeeze on them. We drag them through the finance office. We make them sign on the dotted line. Then we wash it and do a big applause ceremony when they drive off with it that day. No. We don't want the bespoke company coming in and chasing people off our lots. No. It's not happening. So in different places around the country, there were actually discussions about banning the Tesla model from coming to their neighborhoods.
Yeah. And I think a lot of that also had to do with the factory, I think they wanted to put there, but you're right. It was new and different. And all of a sudden you're going, well, why is that guy allowed to be here? And, you know, and other ones are working harder at it. And, you know, it's all that stuff people are scared of the new, and that's what happens. So, but it's interesting. If you look at it, there's so many different ways of attacking a market, and we've named a bunch of them that do it in very different ways, and when they do, sometimes they work, and when they do work, it's a great story.
Would you like to send our listeners off with something they can work on right now?
Give me an example. Like, what do you mean? Just go think about something, or
we have about 10 minutes left here, and I was thinking I'd like to put them to work. We're actually going to give them some homework if you don't mind.
Okay.
You have some questions that brands should ask themselves about their brand, their market, and their competition before they do rebranding. We've covered some of the, largely through anecdote and Socratic storytelling, we've covered some of the reasons why rebranding and retooling is necessary. But what are some of the questions they need to ask themselves about brand, market, and competition before they do that?
I mean, again, that's a podcast in and of itself, right?
But yeah.
The interesting thing about that is if you're listening and you're thinking about a rebrand at all, or what it takes to build a brand, let me just first answer that with a quick anecdote, since that's what we've been doing so far.
Yeah.
If you closed your eyes and you thought about Nike, and I said, Nike just announced they're going to start an airline, and describe for me what the plane looks like, what the colors are, maybe what the food is, what they're showing on the television, what the flight attendants are wearing. And if we kind of compared notes, we're probably all going to come up with something very similar. And that's going to be something like, there's going to be orange somewhere. It's going to be a swoosh on the tail, probably.
Yeah.
You know, they're all probably going to be wearing, you know, sneakers or trainers on their feet. Probably some sort of like quick wicking athletic wear that they're wearing. The food's going to be healthy. On the TV is probably going to be ESPN, something like that. And if you think about that.
Yeah. I saw a lot of blue for some reason.
Oh, that's interesting. That's interesting. Yeah. But in general, we come up with something that's quite similar because we know them so well. We have a visual idea. We have a feeling that's associated with that company, Nike. And so when you're looking at your own brand, now they have a lot of equity, years and years, and a lot of money and time and great products that have gone into that, why we can do that. But if you're starting a company, I mean, ask yourself, you know, what is your essence? What is your brand essence? Can you say that in two or three words? Come up with your vision statement. You know, why did you want to do what you're doing? Sell your service or product, or, you know, make something, you know, what is that? What's your mission? What do you want to accomplish in the future because of this business that you created? You know, that's your mission statement. I would look at your values. What do you value in your product or service or inherently in your business? What are your differentiators compared to people in the marketplace? If you're new on the scene, why are you new? Why would people care? And start asking yourself these questions. I think a lot of times where a company like ours is beneficial is to really challenge people on those ideas. We have a lot of people who come say, oh, we have a mission statement. And it's not really a mission statement. It's kind of like, you know, I wanted to start a new car company because I love cars. Well, that's not really a mission statement. I'm making that up. That never happened. But, you know, that idea. So working with people to really challenge them. And we've had a lot of people go, wow, I don't think I should start a company. Or I'm going to pivot. I'm going to do this instead of that. Or I'm going to focus on this area because there's an opportunity in the marketplace for me. I'm going to position my brand in a way when that could be by price, by quality, by whatever you're doing. If you look at the late Tony Hsieh's company, Zappos and Zappos.com,
yep.
Very quickly he said, oh, actually he moved to your neck of the woods in Las Vegas. And
He was involved in revitalizing the downtown. That jerk was all to have a tiny house. I want a tiny house. Yeah. My experience with Zappos, the first time I heard them was many, 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 many moons ago. Somebody told me there was a shoe company called Zappos that if you called them and ordered a pizza, they'd have it delivered to you. I tested it. It actually happened.
Yeah. Oh yeah. And that was in his book, Delivering Happiness. But
yeah,
that's my point. Exactly. You just illustrated my point. And that is, they wanted to be known for the best customer service in the world. And soon after they launched they were the first online reseller of other people's shoes because they didn't know if it would even work. So they had a little test program. They proved the concept that, people would order shoes online. There might be a high return rate, but if you keep them happy and if you keep them with, you know, free shipping until it fits and so forth. And that quickly turned into how to treat people. And he said very early on that he doesn't have a shoe company. You know, he's in the customer service business. They just happen to sell shoes.
Right.
And so when you look at that and you go, it doesn't matter what they sell. They're selling it, to his book's point, they're selling happiness. And just to your story right there, because that is true in the book, he pre-proved to somebody that they would do it. And they will do it for you because they are the kindest, nicest people in the world. But they're trained to do that. That is their brand. Their brand is happiness. Their brand is is getting you the right thing. And I've heard, I used to send my customer service team to their training, and, you know, they'll tell you that if they don't have a product or they got the wrong one at somebody's wedding or a big event, they'll find a local store, and they have the right through like this little surprise and delight program. They'll buy something from a local mall and call someone and say, hey, your product's actually there. And you can go pick it up. It's on us. I mean, that opportunity, you think, well, they're going to lose money. Well, no, what they've done is they've built a lifetime customer. So their lifetime value is increased. It is, but getting back to the point of that is a brand. So what do you want to be known for? What's your legacy? What do you want your company to stand for? And those are the kind of things that we can help with. So, okay. So let's get back to the homework. I would say if you're thinking about a rebrand or starting a company and you need a brand, think about those things. What is your product or service? How are you going to be known? How do you want to be known or referred to? Everyone's going to say the best or the leader or whatever, but let's have a little gut check. You know, where can you put yourself in the marketplace? Are you a disruptor? Can you be? How are you going to appropriate yourself to those customers? Are you going to go where they are? Are you going to have them come to where you are and change that? Is your position going to be as a differentiator or just I'm going to build a better mousetrap? And so think about those and then start crafting your brand values and start writing them down. What is important to the business? At that point, it gets a little bit more sophisticated. We start talking about tone and voice and how to speak to your customers. And I'll save people that, conversation, but think about who you are. Bring up a list of competitors in that space. And where would you plot yourself? Plot it on a vertical and horizontal axis of quality and cost or customer service and awareness or whatever it might be. And plot your competition or who you think your competition could be and put yourself against them. Do you want to be known for this or that? And then start building the brand from there. Building a brand takes time. Building a company might be easier. Building a brand takes time. So I would say, think about those things, write those things down. And if you need help, we have a great free guide you can download at our website, thebrandleader.com. It's called The Ultimate Guide to Rebranding. And while it sounds like it's all for rebrands, it really just explains a lot of the things I just talked about. Gives you a little bit of a workbook that you can look through and help you along your journey.
Wow, you just answered my final question, which is, where can our people go when they want to take this to the next level? So simply go to thebrandleader.com, www.thebrandleader.com, and they can find that guide. In fact, I'm on the website and I'm looking at it right now. I'm probably going to grab it for myself. I see it in a couple of different places on the webpage. I'm not going to say exactly where, but I'll just say it's very easy for the people to find, just in case you rebrand and somebody's listening to this 2 years from now, because I believe your content is so evergreen in terms of its adaptability that I don't want to get stuck with that. But yeah, the free branding guide is in fact there. It's looks really, really cool. I'm going to have to sign up for this myself and take a look at it for myself. So yeah, what I got, and it's free. So yeah, what I got out of that is really taking a good, clear, unbiased look at what you actually want to accomplish. And the thing that I'm latching on is, do you want to be a disruptor? That's what jumps out at me.
Yeah.
I know. I'm aware of companies that understand that their market actually consists of about 20 people in the entire world. There's not much for them to disrupt because what they do is so specialized and so niched that nobody can touch it. They don't need to disrupt. All they need is to keep those 20 people around. And when the 21st shows up, make sure that they don't try and go reinvent it themselves. But exactly. For commoditized and retail and things along those lines, yeah, I randomly, almost 20 years ago, somebody mentioned to me, there was this crazy shoe company called Zappos that if you called there and ordered a pizza, you'd actually get a pizza delivered to your door. And I tested it and it worked. Yeah, I knew their name from that point forward.
Of course, yeah. And again, that is a brand. It's kind of like you remember the people in your life who treated you well or had great character, who said great things, who did good for others. You remember those people who achieved greatness. Uh-huh. I mean, those are the ones you remember. The ones that, that are the wallflowers that treat you poorly, you either don't remember or you remember without a lot of a lot of honor and grace. So I would say, that a brand is the same thing. A business can have that same connection with people.
Yeah. I mean, now a traditional look might be, Why are you wasting time gabbing with people about pizza and other bullshit? We sell shoes. Put shoes on them and get the money and get them out the door. Okay, so now you've sold one pair of shoes.
Maybe when I called
to test that theory, I wasn't in the market for shoes, but I probably told 100 people this story, 99 of whom had probably never even heard of Tony Hsieh or read his book. I'm willing to bet you the 15 of them eventually found their way to Zappos.com and become paying customers.
Well, of course.
So what they did is they put me to work for them as their unpaid salesperson.
That was just a byproduct, you know.
Yeah.
It was just a byproduct because, you know, they don't sell shoes. They sell happiness. And that,
exactly.
That's their thing, you know, so that's I think we saw it all.
Yep. So once again, tell everybody, go to www.thebrandleader.com, get the free rebranding guide. So Kyle Duford, thank you so much for being with us today. It's been an honor and believe me, an education.
Thank you so much for having me. It was definitely a fun conversation, Adam.
We trust you enjoyed today's episode of the Business Creators Radio Show. Check out our previous and upcoming episodes on our website at www.businesscreatorsradioshow.com. While you're there, be sure to subscribe via your favorite network so you get fresh episodes delivered straight to you. Until next time, have a great day. Take care.